strictly true.
Do you not know how to start it without going, welcome back, guys?
Yeah, no. I don't know how to do anything. It's amazing how quickly you forget things. Isn't it? It's amazing how quickly things feel unfamiliar.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't even know who you are. We'll have a long weekend, like Labor Day or something, and I'll come back to run the board like, I hope I can do this.
Yeah, it's even weirder when it's like, that's something physical, but when it's just being creative or funny or interesting or carrying on in conversation. I've spent my last several days with a puppy.
Yeah.
Who's a conversationalist. And I heard you think about the puppy. Bitching about the fact that
I'm just saying
stole your thunder.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah. I didn't put two and two together.
Oh, I did immediately. I was like, oh, of course.
Should have said something.
Why would I take that away from you? I didn't want to steal your thunder.
Yeah, that was fun. That was a completely happy, fun, good idea thing. That a puppy was not in the mix for Christmas, and then with just a couple of days to go, I can tell you, Phoebe and Nick and I went shopping at the Galleria, and we were sitting and we were having lunch, and Phoebe went to the bathroom, and I said, do you think she'd want a puppy? And I kind of like floated it out there in just the easiest sort of way. And of course, my dog obsessed daughter would love a puppy, but she didn't think it would happen that quickly, because who the hell just does that? And called my friend Roger Seaver, Seaver's Retrievers, where we got Augie, and he had two dogs. So have you ever heard of a Golden Door?
No.
I hadn't either. So they do Golden Retrievers and Labradors, and then they just mixed them. He said it happened by accident, actually. And so now they have Golden Doors.
A Labrador and a Golden fell in love.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, that's one way to put it. That's a nice way to put it. Speaking of studs, so our dog, whose current name is Moose, it's been Blue. It's been many things. We just can't name this damn dog.
He kind of looks like a Kevin.
He does look like a Kevin. Nick and I were really pushing for Seabass or Karen. We really wanted to name him Karen. Yeah. Or Dr. Rob Hagen, my friend Rob. And yeah, Phoebe's just, nah, she's not having any of this. But his dad, Willie, is a full-blooded golden, beautiful, and he has three legs because he had an accident. And he had his arm amputated, and he's still out there doing it, literally. Just throwing that one paw over and going to town.
Good for him.
Yeah, right? So, yeah, his mom was a black, half golden, half lab, and his dad was a full golden, and he looks like a golden, and his brother, who was there also, looked like a lab. Interesting.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Puppies. That's the cool thing about, like, dogs and cats. If a human has twins, they're going to look somewhat alike, even if they're fraternal. I mean, especially right off the bat. But it's crazy to me that a cat have a litter of kittens, and one is orange, and one is gray, and one is black.
Yeah, some of his brothers and sisters were black. And, his brother just looked like a lab. Like a big, lanky. It's cool. These Golden Doors are cool. First of all, I think purebreds can get a little too purebred, you know? And mutts. I'm sorry. Man, I haven't talked in a while. Mutts are great, and this is like a really highfalutin mutt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just a mix. So yeah, he's super cool. I like him.
Man, speaking of like a purebred, I was watching this new Netflix show called 7 Days Out.
Oh, I'm all over it.
The Westminster Dog Show. It's so crazy the way that works. Like, basically, they call it a sport, which I found interesting. Yeah. But the sport is to have the best. I know the dog has to be very well behaved, but it's basically the best looking dog on top of that. So it's like a pageant mixed in with an obedience sport.
I couldn't believe you've seen Best in Show.
I have not.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You have to watch it tonight. It is so close to the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Best in Show is obviously, it's like the king of all satires and parody movies. But seeing the real people is like, oh, God, they weren't very far off with this one.
They love their dogs.
The two ladies were lesbians, right?
No, I think they were maybe not out. I think there was definitely something going on there because one lady was like, it's a victory for both of us. And the other one was like, yeah, Carol, like, be cool.
Wait till you see Best in Show because that's two. God damn it.
Do you need some water, Dave?
I don't know. Two of the women are they're not gay yet, but they get gay. Yeah. It's like that story.
Those two, I feel like, were either about to be gay or have been gay, but they're not, you know, letting people know. And the one girl just had, like, no chill. And the other one was getting embarrassed.
Yes.
It's a very telling scene.
This is going to sound terrible. The one with no chill is my least favorite kind of female.
Here, we're back with the DGP. Let's go.
No, just like that. Oh, no, I should shut up.
I mean, I don't care. Do it.
I don't know how to put it. I do, but I shouldn't. Yeah.
What's your least favorite type of male? That's better. Why don't you settle on something and let us know who that
is? Okay. Let me think about that. My least favorite kind of human, and this really does go across, because this would have been my least favorite kind of female, which this lady was too, is loud and self-important.
Okay.
Like unaware, when someone just doesn't get that people don't find you interesting and they're so loud about it. I hate that.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like I'm at that age where I just think about everything I do so much. I'm trying to like figure out who I am in this world. And you see people, maybe fully fledged adults who are just kind of powering through any given situation. And that's scary. That's what I don't want to be. I want to keep it a little more mindful than that, you know. Like, on one hand, good for you that you have your thing and you're so confident. But on the other hand, I don't know, read the room.
We've had this conversation, though. Like, the classic was when that woman came up to me and said, oh, my God, I love you so much. You're the second funniest person on 97.1. I said, oh, who's funnier than me? And she said, Laura Ingraham. And this people think that. People think that dumb, obvious, hit the snare drum humor is funnier than subtle callback reference humor. They just do. And so people like that lady, the lady's not a monster or anything on this show. She's one of these, everything she says is just sort of like, oh, funny thing that's not funny at all. Oh, I hate that. I do, it's probably misogynistic or something, but I hate it worse in women. I think it's with guys, I just roll my eyes. With guys, I'm like, you're a dick. With women, it's like, oh, that's so annoying to me.
Yeah, because it's the opposite team. There are things that men do that I would excuse in a woman. You know, I think that's just how we work as human. But then I think there are women who just hate other women who, like, everything they do is going to be picked apart. But I am willing to say if a man does, I can't think of a specific behavior thing, but there would be things that I would excuse in a woman that I would not in a man. Oh, I hate guys like that. Ugh.
Maybe it's jealousy, but because I'm not that person, I'm not loud. I'm not. Hey, everyone, look at me.
I know you're clearing your throat.
Shut up. I'm never the loudest or funniest person at a dinner table or a party or anything like that. So when obvious dickhead guy walks in, or flamboyant, I used to be hot about 50 years ago woman walks in, I just hate them.
Yeah.
I just do. They just bug me. And I'm sure it's mostly about my insecurities, or if you guys knew how funny, you know, but I'm just.
Maybe I'll start being loud.
Yeah, I was always a comedy writer. Like even, I can remember in third grade, there was a kid who was that kid, super loud, popular, cute, and I would just feed him material. Like, we'd just be sitting, like, in music class, and I would whisper something funny to him, and he would yell it, and everyone's like, oh, my God! Like you do me now.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything.
Oh, shut up. Whatever. What should we talk about?
Oh, yesterday on the show that you weren't here for, we talked about have you seen the Louis C.K. video where he says the N-word?
I'm sure I have.
Okay, so it's, like, him and Ricky Gervais.
Yes, I have.
Chris Rock.
Yeah.
So we were talking about that, and then, oh, has he been punished enough, blah, blah, blah. I wished you were in the room, because I felt like I just wasn't connecting with the other guys in a way that I felt like you would have gotten it. I don't think, whenever we ask, like, hasn't Louis C.K. been punished enough, there's no one to punish him, right? Like, who's in charge that's going to punish him? To me, I want him to get back on the road. I want to see how he does. I want to see how the market plays out and if people are willing to spend money on him and if people want to see him. If people don't want to see him, that's not punishing him. That means he made a really bad career decision by victimizing other people and then covering it up and then coming out later and being like, okay, yeah, I did it. That's not a punishment. That's the consequences of your own stupid actions, right?
Yeah.
And I was saying yesterday, 3 years ago, if Louis C.K. was going to be in town, I would have made it a point. Like, if I had the money to do it, I would go see him, and it would have been an event. Now, if he was coming through, if he was coming to Stiefel or something, I don't think I would go. I can't see myself leaving my house. Still watch Louis on TV, fine, but I can't see myself making him a destination. The only way I would want to see that is if he were real and actually talked about what happened and not in a, oh, I lost $25 million in 5 minutes way. Yeah. I don't care. I don't care that you lost $25 million. You're still doing fine, bro. I want him to talk about what he did and how he disappointed people and how he hurt people and how he let people defend him knowing that he did it. I want to see him do that. Then I'm first in line to go see that.
Mm-hmm. But that's not a form of punishment? From you, that you need.
No, I don't need something. That. That's how he would remain.
That's what you would find interesting.
That's how he would remain relevant and interesting to me. Because I always looked at him as like, oh, he's an artist. He'll take something that's humiliating and he'll make it into art. Why wouldn't you do that with the most humiliating thing you've ever done to yourself or other people?
Remember when you weren't on the show then, but we've referenced it many times, when Frank Cusumano could not believe that Adrian Peterson used a switch on his young son's scrotum because he's such an amazing athlete. We're like, well, apples and oranges, doesn't one thing has nothing to do with the other. But I do kind of think that one has to do with the other when it comes to Louis. Because in addition to being very funny, although he's a certain kind of taste and he is mine, I've always loved him. What I loved about Louis, and especially his show, was just how much he got it. You know, how he would just drill down to the core of any issue, and you're like, oh, this guy just gets it. What fascinates me is that someone like that, who's not only seemingly so self-aware, but so aware of life and humanity and the universe, can masturbate in front of multiple women and be so completely unaware and clueless that, one, they might want to see that, and two, that it's okay to just keep doing, you know what I'm saying? Like, that is what fascinates me about that. And I think that he legit has a blind spot. You would have to. I've pulled some shit in my day, but just whipping it out and masturbating in front of someone who doesn't know you're going to do that, you are missing something. There's something about your makeup that allows you to do that.
I don't know. I disagree. I don't think that there's anything... On the record, I don't think there's anything wrong with doing that as long as the person watching you is into it
well,
and is
made
it clear.
That's not what we're talking about, though.
Yeah, yeah. I know what you're saying. But to me, it's kind of a cop-out to say, like, oh, he has a blind spot. He just doesn't get it. That guy does get it. He does get it. And in the N-word video that just resurfaced, he's showing that he's the kind of person who's like, yeah, but I can get away with it. I'll say the N-word because Chris Rock says it's cool. Like, that kind of was... Things clicked into place with me. I still respect his art. But he is a person. Maybe that video was what truly knocked him off the pedestal for good for me, because it was like, oh, no, you are the definition of, I hate to bring it up, but white male privilege. Like, hey, I get to get away with this because I'm a big fucking deal. I get to say the N-word. Chris Rock says it's okay. Hey, Ricky Gervais, why don't you say it, man? Haha, we're getting away with it because we're cool. Very Bill Maher-like, right? Yeah. Which I hated. And, I'm going to whip it out and I'm going to masturbate in front of these women. If they really don't like it, they'll run out. But chances are they'll probably just let me get away with it because I'm Louis C.K. and they look up to me and I'm respected and they'll feel awkward
and
to make me feel bad
about
myself.
For the record, when I say blind spot, I don't mean excusable.
Right.
I just think that anyone who would rape someone, anyone who would do that, there's a blind spot. And maybe I'm...
Well, it's lacking in empathy for another person.
Yeah. But maybe you're right. Maybe it's just that, well, I can probably get away with it.
Yeah. I think that's what rapists are. I think it's like, I could do that. I don't care if they want to or not. I want it. It's just prioritizing yourself over anyone else, you know.
So what
at the end of the day.
I saw the headline about that, Is it blown up, the whole N-word thing? Because that was like a special.
It was I believe it was an HBO special. Yeah. And I talked about this on the show yesterday, too. It's so interesting because if we would have seen this video 3 years ago, I'm sure some of us have seen it and we don't remember seeing it.
I saw it live.
I would have watched it and been like, oh, you just said that. That's crazy. Louis can get away with that. But now everything is colored differently because we know this other thing about him. And the culture is very different now. And then the part that makes me crazy is people are going after Jerry Seinfeld saying he didn't do enough by just not saying it. Because Ricky Gervais said it. He said, oh, I don't say that on stage. And he's like, well, you just did. You just said it on stage just now. And Jerry Seinfeld's the only one on the stage who didn't say it. And people are saying, well, oh, yeah, good job. You didn't say the N-word. That makes you a real good guy. Like, I mean, it makes him better than those three.
Yeah, people...
You can't please everybody.
Well, that's a real hallmark of our current society, is that I had a girlfriend once that we would fight fairly badly, and what I realized after a few months was, oh, wait a second, it's not enough for me to give you your way, to just go, you know what, fine, you eat the donut, whatever we're fighting about. You need me... like holding a kid down and doing the spit thing and making them say uncle. She needed me to say convincingly, oh, you're right. That's what she needed. It wasn't enough to get, for me, it's enough to get my way.
Yeah.
That's not true. I think we all have that, and I'll poke around on someone hoping that they'll give me what I want. Like they're a kiosk and what I want is for them to go like, yeah, you're right the whole time. But she was just so far out in the extreme, and it was so early in my, you know, dating career that it really stood out. And I think that that's where we are in society, that these groups and these cliques and these mobs, they need more than for you to stop something. They need for you to prostrate yourself and beg the mob for forgiveness. I was just listening on the way down here today. I was listening to NPR, and it was a whole thing about feminism and Me Too. And they're talking about what a shame it is that the movie A League of Their Own, Penny Marshall, the director, just died, is never considered one of the top 10 sports movies. And I thought, oh, interesting. I like that movie. And you're right. It probably isn't, because most people who do lists like that are male, and that's a chick movie kind of thing. And it became clear in the next 5 or 10 minutes that what they needed was sports writers to put it number one at the top of every sports movie list. Yeah. And I wanted to come through the radio and be like, what do you not get about this? Isn't it enough to make your point? It should be enough to make your point. You shouldn't expect or need people to agree with you. But it's not even enough for that. Because, look, do you think any 58-year-old cigar-chomping male sports writer is going to put A League of Their Own at the top of the best sports movie list for any reason other than they're afraid of you? And then what good is it to get something from someone, whether it's sex, affection, agreement, just because they're afraid of you? But that's where we're at in society.
Yeah, because society... I watched, it was either like American Meme or something like that. That's the name of it on Netflix. Just about how internet culture affects us. And there's this one guy, his name's Fat Jewish. He's a big meme guy. And he was saying repeatedly, this is going to crash and burn. We don't know how exactly this is affecting us, but this cannot go on forever. And this is a guy at the top of the game, so he knows what he's talking about. I think the way culture is right now, the way society works, is so the opposite of mindfulness and what's actually healthy and good and right. You and I talk about codependency a lot together because it's something we both struggle with and it's something we both study. And when you look at the way people behave, if you love A League of Their Own so much, it really should be enough for you that it's a great film and you know in your heart it's your favorite sports film, right? The act of forcing it to the top of the list is the opposite of everything that I have studied when it comes to being at one with yourself, mindfulness, anti-codependency, being independent. It is completely the opposite direction. And we as a society are saying to each other, like, yeah, that works. That works. We can force our way to the top on everything. That is not how it works. That is not satisfying. And all it does is leave you wanting more. If you get that to the top of that list, you're just going to move on to the next stupid ass cause. I'm sorry. It means nothing at the end of the day. It means nothing.
And again, it's not real. It is
not real.
The exact same thing as a big kid pinning a little kid down and punching him or slapping him or spitting in his face or whatever they do in grade school until they say something.
Okay.
You say that you love Nancy. I don't. Say it. And then he says it. And it's like, yes.
Okay. I get what you're saying with that analogy, but I think that those people look at it as two or three of the little kids ganging up together to take down the big bully that's been hurting them.
Sure.
Which is okay. But the moral of the story is violence is wrong. So even when you're gathering up a few of your little friends to take down the big guy, you're using the same tactics as the big guy.
But to me,
and that disconnect is what is messing up our society right now.
But to me, it's not just the tool used, which in this case would be violence as well. Mob, you know, ganging up, we're going to boycott you, your career, you're going to be blacklisted. To me, the more interesting, more subtle point is the payoff. You get nothing.
Yeah.
Because the guy didn't mean it. The kid said whatever. He loves wieners because you pounded him until he said it. And no one's going to put A League of Their Own on the top of the list unless they just love that movie in any other way except out of duress. Hell, my puppy doesn't have a name yet, really. And we went through a few names that I scratched off the list because they might be racist. Like Poncho. Can you name a dog Poncho anymore? I don't know, because it's like a traditional Mexican name. I'm not Mexican. I have no Latin or Hispanic lineage. And 5 years ago, Poncho, done. A year ago, probably. But now I'm like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Then there are a couple others where I'm like, I don't know. Is that somehow insensitive or racist? We're going to end up calling him Ted or something. So I just hate that we're all, and again, I know I say this all the time, but when I was a kid, I think we all kind of knew where the line was. And when someone crossed it, it was really, really obvious. Now, I get that the line moves and that the line should move. There was a time a couple hundred years ago where you could own a person. That line should have moved faster and harder than it did. So saying, you know, retarded or saying the F word for gay people or saying the N, whatever it is. I get it that society moves on and things that used to be okay are no longer okay. I'm 100% fine with that. That's the way it evolves. But our tools, like you said, Rach, the violence and the outcomes, making someone do something that they don't mean, it's just stupid.
Yeah.
Speaking of masturbation, that's all you're doing. You're just getting yourself off by shaming someone into giving you a response that they don't mean.
Yeah. It's just all about control. I want it my way. And ideally, people's views will change organically. I mean, to me, that's the greatest way change is affected. Obviously, like the civil rights movement, that stuff needed to happen. And then people witnessed that happening. It kind of died down after the first waves or so. I mean, I wasn't there, but from what I understand. And then people began to think about it on their own. And people were making the choices for themselves. Like, wow, yeah, you are equal to me. You are a real human being. You do deserve everything that I deserve. You reach that within yourself. I just think we're too impatient to wait for that to happen with other, like feminism. I'm a feminist. I believe women can do most things that men can do and vice versa. I think we each have things that we can do that the other gender, sex, whatever can't do. But I appreciate so much when you talk about having like a male ally, like a guy that's a feminist. I appreciate so much more when it's someone who's obviously just thought about it and gets it. And it's like, yeah, I got your back. Mm-hmm. Than the guy who's like, all women deserve this. It's like, you're grandstanding, yeah. And I don't trust you. Yeah. I don't get why you need to say this.
Yeah.
To me, it should just be like, if you're a good person, you know that women can do what men can
and
do.
And
women
you know
deserve
how
a chance.
You know the difference is when that first person draws a line you're uncomfortable with. That if, for example, I said, oh, come on, women are clearly intellectually equal to men, but physically blah. That might make some women uncomfortable, like, well, wait a second, we're just as physically, you know, but when someone draws a line that you're uncomfortable with, that suggests honesty. I'm being honest. and my views can evolve and maybe together. And that's another thing, too. And this goes for marriages and best friendships in society. Both parties have to be able to evolve their opinions. Yeah. And you don't see that anymore. All you see is, I planted my flag here. I've drawn the line. And I will not move. I will not fucking move an inch. And you're going to come all the way to me. Now, I'm not saying that if there are still people out there who thinks that blacks are animals.
Yeah, it's not our job to be like, I'll give you that.
Right. But those sorts of issues, are blacks humans or animals, are really few and far between.
Yeah.
Most issues, even societal issues, they're textured and they're gray, and we have just stopped giving up any ground at all, or even being willing to listen.
Well, I mean, I think people will get, I think we are about to crash whenever it comes to all of it. I think Trump is helping that along in the right direction. If he's doing anything. You know, if he's doing anything for us, I think he is bringing this to a fever pitch.
Yeah.
And I think it will crash soon. And I think people will look around and say, what have I been doing? Maybe I should take a step back. You know, 5 years ago, I was all over all possible social media and I loved it. I didn't see a problem with it. I was never someone who would, you know, a chronic overshare or something, but I didn't even think of it. I didn't think that it could have a negative impact at all. Now I have taken 20 steps back. And I really try to limit my time. And I feel better whenever I'm not constantly checking up on other people, constantly thinking of an opinion to have on something. That is good for your brain to have that rest. And I think over time, I mean, it's just inevitable. If something is this bad for us, which I believe it is, we'll stop. Just like with cigarettes, we used to think they were fine and like, oh, smoke in the doctor's office, no big deal. And then you figure out what's going on and you go, okay, this is bad. Maybe I'll indulge with this once in a while, but no. I can't be chain smoking at the grocery store anymore.
I was speaking of smoking. I was talking to Phoebe about juuling and that whole thing. That's huge with kids, you know, her age. And as I was talking to her about nicotine and hearing myself make the argument against it, I get why people start doing it when they're teenagers because you're stupid. But my God, it is a carcinogen that is created and engineered to addict you. Is it the dumbest thing ever in the world to say, I'm not addicted to this thing sitting in front of me. I have no physical or emotional addiction to it, but I know that it could kill me and probably will. And I know that once I start, I will be chemically addicted to it. I think I'm going to try this. It's the dumbest thing ever. And thank God fewer and fewer people are doing it. And I basically told her, like, look.
I feel like you spend so much time telling her not to do something that I truly don't think she's in danger of doing.
No. I trust me. I was very, very offhand. It wasn't like a big conversation.
Yeah.
It was mostly in my head. And I agree with you. I don't think there's much chance of that. And it's not. It's not even like, oh, my daughter would never be capable of this or that at all. She'll do stuff. I found out that Nick did a bunch of stuff when he was a teenager. I didn't know it. And that's the nature of being a teenager. But just that one thing, it just struck me now. Like every time you see someone, we have a lot of friends here that smoke and I don't know. Thank God that would never.
Start calling them out.
I was so bothered by it. My mom and dad, like most people's mom and dads my age, smoked in the house, in the car. Sitting outside, it was just a constant thing. And every now and then, they'd be sitting outside and say, they'd want me to go get them a cigarette. And I would refuse. And I was terrified of my mom and dad. But I just everything about it, I hated the way they smelled, the way they looked, the way they felt. Ugh. Never wanted to do it. That's the main reason I didn't smoke pot until I was much older in life. Was the smoking part. It wasn't the drug part.
Yeah.
It wasn't that it was like, it makes you a bad person or a burnout. It was, this is too much like smoking cigarettes. I don't have any interest in it. Oh, yet I find it so sexy. Like on movies and stuff, you know, like especially the glamour 40s
and
50s.
You're not making any sense.
I'm making perfect sense. It looks cool. It does.
like
it
on
looks
film.
Sexy. Yes. Yeah, agreed.
I always like whenever someone, and this sounds so judgmental, but it's just like a little joke I have with myself. If someone who smokes like you know, why are you drinking diet soda? There's aspartame in that. It's like, you smoke. Like, why are you giving me health advice? At least I'm quenching my thirst.
Can I tell you about
sounds good right now. Yeah.
About a show I watched yesterday?
Yep.
Do you know who Bob Lazar is?
Nope.
Okay, you're lucky. So in the UFO community, Bob Lazar is a guy who 30 years ago came out and said, I work at Area 51, S4 to be exact for my fellow nerds, and I work on flying saucers and reverse engineering them and all this stuff. And then he was debunked, and you never went to Caltech, and you never worked there. Well, there's a new movie out, and it's not a good movie. It's sort of like if I made a movie, but it's interviewing him again after 30 years. And I believe every word he said. It's so interesting that here's just one thing. So 30 years ago, and it's all on video, it's not like he can say like, oh, I said this. 30 years ago, he said, when we go in to work, we have to put our hand on this thing, and it's like in the shape of fingers, but there's little pins in it, and there's a light from above, and what it does is it measures the little bones, your metatarsals or whatever, and that's how you identify. Well, 30 years ago, everyone's like, shut up, that's stupid. They just released pictures of it.
Whoa.
Like, okay, here it is. And you can, you know, you can just tell if someone's lying or not. You kind of can. And so in the movie, the guy shooting the movie shows him these, and his reaction is so genuine. He was like, oh my God, that's it. That's it. Rather than saying, yes, I'm vindicated, he was like, I haven't seen this in 30 years. That's so cool. I truly think everything he said is true.
Did he meet any aliens?
No. He said, one time he looked into a room he wasn't supposed to look into for a nanosecond, and he saw two guys in lab coats that look like they're talking to someone really little. But he thinks that, I mean, he worked on the flying saucers. So to him, like, well, clearly someone flew them here and the chairs are real little, but he thought it was just like an anthropomorphic doll they're using to get like the stuff.
Practice.
Basically. Yeah.
Practice on this stuffed animal. No, I believe in aliens for sure. I don't know what's going on at Area 51. That could be a mirage to keep us away from something else.
Sure.
But I was just thinking the other day, so I live in the city now, and I've lived not in the country for about 6 years now, and I like it because I feel like I'm not going to be abducted by aliens. It's a real thing, you know? It's a real, like, neurotic fear of mine. And when I was little, nothing was scarier than any sort of alien movie. Like, that just terrified me.
Hmm.
Way more than ghosts and demons and whatever else.
It's never scared me.
Really scared me as a kid.
You know how I had the idea for Spanx first?
Yeah, your girlfriend did.
Swear to God, this is true. So the way that Bob Lazar, he gives a very lengthy, technical explanation of their propulsion system. And it's basically they have these components that amplify gravity. I swear on Phoebe's life, like 30, 40 years ago, I told all my friends, this is how you could have interstellar travel, is I can't do this, but you create something that if I like point it at, say a planet, and the planet has X gravity, and we all know that gravity pulls you down, like you, that's why you fall, that's why you weigh what you do, because of gravity,
mm-hmm.
that if you could like exponentially magnify the gravity, it would just suck you toward it at close to the speed of light. My friends are like, ugh. And that's exactly what Bob Lazar said that they did. Ha! And Spanx. I mean, those two ideas, that's enough for a lifetime.
Yeah, but the
Spanx
thing,
and interstellar gravity travel.
Okay, I'll give you that one. But the Spanx thing I can never let pass by because you didn't invent it. You saw someone else invent it, and then you thought, oh, I should sell that. So that's not you inventing it.
No. Not true.
You said that you saw that your girlfriend at the time had cut off the legs of pantyhose and was wearing them to suck it. That's not you inventing Spanx. That's you observing what women have done for 100 years and saying, oh, I should sell that.
Yes. No.
That's not inventing
Fine,
it.
Fine. Then I didn't invent it. I missed my opportunity to be a billionaire.
That's more honest.
No. I never said I invent.
You said earlier.
Well, it's a term of art. Okay. I didn't say like, hey, honey, you have big thighs. Maybe you should try to cut these off. No, I just saw her do it and thought, wow, what a great idea.
The Spanx lady went on Oprah one time and was talking about how she came up with the name for Spanx. No, she was talking about how she came up with the name for Spanx. And I do believe the name is a big reason why it got so big.
Yeah, yeah.
And she said she picked the Spanx because it's got that K sound, like Coca-Cola and Kodak and all these huge brands. People respond to the K sound. That's why people like close, you know? Mm. So I try to keep
it
that in mind.
It bothers me.
So if you ever do, you know, if you ever have an idea and you want me to help you patent it or something, we got to come up with a K-sounding name.
Okay. Like Foxpaw.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why that works so great. Yeah, no, I get the whole like, oh, dry cleaning. I wish I would have thought of that. But it wouldn't even bother me so much if she made $1 million. But she made like $10 billion.
Yeah, because she made it happen.
I know. I get it.
And it's not just pantyhose. It's a different kind of material that she uses.
I was back when I started the show, I was working with a local company, a internet company. I won't say the name because they haven't told me it's okay. But they were working on something pre-Facebook that was basically Facebook. It was a way for cities, you'd have like southroxana.com. And then everyone who wanted to could have a page and you could say like, I'm having a bake sale. It was basically Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
2 or 3 years before Facebook. That's gotta kill
you. Have you ever seen The Social Network?
Nah.
Oh, it's really good.
Jesse Eisenberg issue.
I know, but you would like it because
he's the white Jamie Foxx to me. I hate them both.
Jamie Foxx is fine. There's nothing wrong with him.
Oh, I hate him.
All right, fine. Well, Jesse Eisenberg,
look at me.
Is good in this.
I'm Ray.
He's I hate him. Well, he can't.
Who do you hate?
Oh, I hate lots of people.
Well, then say one.
I hate Samuel L. Jackson a lot. He adds nothing other than... Yeah, okay. No, Jesse Eisenberg is playing Mark Zuckerberg in this movie, so he's a dick. So it's like, it works out. He uses his Jesse Eisenberg-ness for good. It's really interesting the way Facebook started.
I think the twins look like your brother, Big Dave Zimmerman.
Just because they're tall.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Well, I mean,
Skip
they're
Weber
like,
looks like
they've
him.
They've got like blonde hair.
Manute Bol looks like him. Everyone looks like Dave.
Well, they don't look like him, so the tallness is about the only, you know.
Put some pictures up side by side. We'll let the people decide. Go on.
Oh, yeah, no, it's just interesting the way that Facebook unfolded. You had to be in college
and to sum it up.
And to sum it up, it's really cool. You should watch it. I loved that movie. I've seen it like 10 times.
Can I tell you something?
Yep.
Can I make a confession? Did you, you were talking about Netflix, the 7 days before series.
7 days out.
Oh, for the love of God.
I think that's the name of it.
Okay, fine, Miss Perfect. Did you watch the one about the restaurant?
I watched it last night.
Okay. So for those of you who haven't, it's the number one restaurant in the world. It's in New York, and they shut down for 3 months to retool, and it's a whole thing about how they get ready and stuff. What I took from it is these guys are literally supposedly the best restaurant on the planet Earth, and they're two guys, partners, one back of the house, one front of the house. They're both obsessed with being the best. And they're so OCD. And no detail goes unnoticed. And we need to this, and we need to that. And they just rack their brains every day. How could we be even 0.001% better? I don't do that. I love the show. The show has been hugely successful. I've carved out a legacy. I don't do that. Well, I feel bad. When I watched that, I was like, God, Dave, you should be like that.
Well, don't feel bad for two reasons. Number one is that's not really your job. Your job is to be you. I think it's more my job to try to think of those things, and I do spend...
So you're the one failing.
I'm failing, yeah.
All right.
I do try to think of like new things for us to do, but I think you would have to admit it's hard to get new stuff started on the show because we have such a short attention span that if something doesn't go above and beyond perfect the first time, it's probably not going to happen again.
True.
So that's a high pressure, whatever. But I spent a lot of time thinking about it. I've been thinking a lot this break, whatever. Anyway, I wouldn't feel bad about that. The other thing is, those two guys are in a service industry. And in that episode, they say every single thing we do is for the customer's experience. That's a lot harder to do whenever we're putting on a show for people that we can't see every day. That's a lot harder to just cater to them. All you can really do is be yourself, which is what you do every day. So I think you're doing a great job there. What those guys do at the restaurant is they're making sure that these people are having an extremely special dining experience. This could be one of the most incredible days of their life. They could be getting engaged. They could be celebrating a promotion, retirement, whatever. And they're choosing that restaurant to celebrate their big day, you know. So to me, it makes all the sense in the world. It would be kind of like if it was something for Phoebe, you would be racking your brain figuring out how you can make it as special as possible. You would, because that's something tangible. She's your little girl. She's right in front of you. You want to make it happen for her. What we do is a little different. It's all
you quite sold yet.
Well, all we can do is put on a show that we feel good about.
I feel lazy though, because I care deeply about the show. I care about its success. I care that people like it. I care that people are entertained. But I just, you know, I try this much as far as, okay, I'm going to go look at all the websites. I'm going to fill a piece of paper with interesting words and stories, and I will relate to the guys on my show, and we'll, but I don't, I guess.
Because we're not high concept. Everything that we've ever done since
are we high concept?
Everything we've ever done since I've been on the show that's been high concept has been completely organic, and it's unfolded on its own. And I like that. To me, the worst radio ever is when, and I had to learn this very quickly whenever I started filling in for you once in a while, all you can do is let it play out. You cannot control what other people are going to say. You can't control a conversation. You can't control an outcome.
So we're like sex. I know you always make fun of me because that's always my analogy.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
true. I don't like it whenever someone will come in and be like, we're going to do this. Okay, and so then you're going to laugh and it's going to be blah, blah, blah. You cannot map out this. What we do on our show, you cannot map out. And I'm not trying to sound like high on a horse, like, yeah, this is just the greatest show
ever. We're such geniuses.
Yeah, this is just where the magic happens. No, it's just a fact. That's how it plays out. So it's been interesting with you gone. Yesterday, we did the show with our friend Tin Convy, and I also did feel bad because I was doing about five times the amount of prep that I do when it's you, because a couple reasons, I'll be honest. A lot of times I'll get prep and you don't look at it or use it or care, so that's a little discouraging, but that's on me. I should just power through and do it anyway. And then the other thing is I just trust you that you have the show done, you know. Having someone else in here, Tim's great. He does a great job, but I have to be more on my toes, you know.
Well, it's like when I did Brian's show.
Yeah, it's exactly like that.
I was prepared out the ass.
Exactly, because it's just different. It's foreign when I don't have
you
here.
I really felt guilty after watching that show. I really, it was, you know, during the break, I recharge. I just let myself go mentally just into a puddle. But that one got me. I was like, oh, man, you really... You should be working as hard as these guys work.
I wouldn't say to work in the same way that they work. I mean, it's always work smart, not hard, right? Isn't that the saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I think we're very lucky to do this. I feel very blessed and very lucky to be on this show. And it's because of you, but I mean, you should feel blessed too that you've been given this opportunity with your life. So I think we both take it for granted a lot. And we were getting burnt out there towards the end of the Hardee's remotes and everything. It was a lot at once. And there were days, I think in general, we put on a great show, but there were a couple of bad shows at the end there because it's just like tired
and I can't do it. I'm interested in your answer here. What to you is a bad show, a bad DGS, or a bad DGS segment? What happens when we go to break and you think to yourself privately, that sucked?
It sucks when...
Tony talks?
Well, yeah. No. It always sucks whenever you're throwing stuff out and nothing's sticking. I feel like I don't like to be too much of a yes man, like, oh, totally, Dave. So I'll kind of like give it room for the other guys as much as I want to always be helping. But there are times when I'm dealing with something in the back, I'm dealing with blah, blah, blah. And if nothing's sticking, that sucks. And that's just... on your support staff for not being more awake and paying attention.
I'm going to go back to the sex analogy. When I was in Amsterdam, me and my buddies went to see a live sex show. And there were like 200 guys packed into this room and just a man and a woman on a stage having the most boring sex you've ever seen in your life. There's nothing exciting about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm standing there with my buddies, Noel and Ricky and Dan. And after like 5 minutes, I'm like, what is happening? Right? This, what is going on?
5 minutes is a long time.
Well, it went on for like an hour.
Yeah.
So, but my point is we are having sex for 4 hours a day in front of people. What we do, and now it's going to sound like, oh, now they're just jacking themselves off. But what we do is almost impossible. Because we don't just do politics. We're not one of those morning show, hit the snare drum kind of bullshit like we know that there have been where hosts are like, here's where you're going to laugh. Then they have a post-mortem show. Oh, you didn't laugh hard enough here. Everything we do is just organic. It just happens or it doesn't. And I think that that's the analogy. Like if you're with someone in bed and you go for a move and they're just like yawn, then the next move you're going to feel less secure about. That's right. I feel like our show sucks.
It's also like sports. Like you need momentum. If you have good momentum when you're playing a sport, you're going to keep being good. That's typically how it works.
True.
So we could take the sex analogy off the table. To go back to what I was saying, to me a bad segment is when nothing is sticking, when me and Mark and Tony are asleep and we're not being quick and we're not helping you, or vice versa. If I'm doing a segment and I look up and you're on your phone and Tony's on his computer and Mark's doing whatever the hell Mark's doing. The other bad segment is when we fall into having the same conversation we've had 30 times
Agreed.
That month. And I think all of that is just the four of us are really comfortable with each other now. It is almost like a relationship where it's like, oh, I know what he's going to do next.
Yeah.
And that's why you need stuff like this. You need breaks. We need this break from Mark. We need this break from Dave. Tony and I are very rarely, we used to work together. I felt like we worked closer together before I was on the show than when we were on the show. Days like, times like this are good for me and him because it's kind of like us teaming up with the new host or whoever's coming in.
Yeah.
It's just rearranging and looking at things from a different perspective.
You know what I would love? I will say this on the DGS as well, as opposed to the DGP. But if you're listening to this, and, you know, don't be a dick if you can help it at all and ruin my Christmas vacation. But you can be honest. I would love to know what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show.
Everyone's going to be like, Paranormal Tuesday.
That's fine. That's fine.
Sorry, I didn't mean to mock
everyone
who likes it.
But don't say like Tom Turbrock. I love
That's
Tom.
That's what everybody says,
Tom's
though.
Not coming back. Tom has another job. Like, what kinds of things? And I'm not even looking at like, I like Half-Wits or Sweet 16, but just...
Well, I'll tell you what people give me
the vibe,
feedback
the
about.
Energy.
People like it when we do dumb shit like Andrew eating mackerel or Mark sucking Cheeto dust off his fingers. They like it whenever it's a good segment with that's centered around Mark where we're not just mocking him and being mean to him. They like it whenever we have heady conversations like this. Every time we've had a 608 segment, there's been a few times where it's just been me and you, and it's been like the DGP. I always have people liking that. I mean, they like it when we're doing something that's not stale and
when
that's not
engaged.
Old. Hot. Exactly. That's all it is.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. It really kind of is that simple. But I know as a consumer, because I listen to tons of podcasts, that's all I care about. Like I can listen to Joe Rogan and he can be interviewing an MMA fighter or a neurobiologist. As long as he's engaged and the person's engaged, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in. I find it interesting. But you can tell, especially when you get to know a host, when you get to know your talent, and you can tell if they're in or out.
Right.
And plus, I'm living a life. You're living a life. Close as, you know, but things happen, you know? Like, our kids are sick. You're having a fight with your significant other, whatever it is, and... You know, then we come in and spend 4 hours a day trying to be engaged.
I think you are cursed a little bit because you've had the Dave Glover show for 18 years. You're so comfortable on the air to almost a fault where it is easy to slip out of. There are
like with Trish the other day.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's like you're so comfortable that it's like you do have all this other stuff going on and you feel comfortable ruminating on that while you're on the air.
Yeah.
And that kind of takes you out of the moment. I like to think to myself, if I'm getting antsy during a segment, if I want to check my phone, and I fail at this all the time, I'm just as bad as anyone else on the show, but I will say that I try not to. I'll have the thought to myself, like, you're at work. Like, it's 4 hours a day that you need to be focused on just this. Just focus on it. You can do all of this later. There are people who work in a toll booth or whatever, and they're not allowed to have their phone. They're not allowed to go on the internet and this and this.
What is your show you love?
Harmontown.
And what do they do that's different from what we do?
Well, it's a live stage show, so there's like audience interaction and stuff. But the episodes I like, they got kicked out of their venue about a year ago this time, and they were doing a lot of studio shows, and a lot of people hated it, but I loved it. I loved just listening to the conversation. And they got kind of, it reminded me of our show in a sense, because there were episodes where it was really good and really on, and then there were episodes where you could tell they weren't feeling it that day, and it was a little, you're kind of slogging through it. It's still interesting. I still listened, but you do want that engagement, you know, as a listener. That's
but
what you crave.
Let me kind of wrap this around and maybe wrap it up here, since you have to go do a regular show.
Yep.
Whether it's sports or sex, whatever analogy you want to do, and this does wrap around, because we just talked about how if we're talking about feminism, you can tell that I mean it when I disagree with you. If all I do is say, oh yeah, you're so brilliant, everything you say, then you know I'm full of shit. I'm just trying to curry your favor. And the same way that to have a truly great what we do, you have to suck sometimes. Otherwise, it's not real.
Yeah.
And there's no one out there in a marriage or a romantic relationship that is you and others consider it to be really solid and great and healthy, that you don't have some shitty times and you fight and you're bored or whatever it happens to be. That's just a mark of reality.
Oh, yeah, totally.
But our show is rare, because what other show shows that? Can you think of another show that if they're having a shitty show or they're mad at each other or they're hungover or whatever it is, they just wear it on their sleeves? I can't.
Yeah.
Either to our, you know, praise or detriment, what we do is completely different. We kind of don't do a show. You're bored now, aren't you?
I've just realized we've been recording for like 52 minutes.
It's a lot for us.
Yeah, and I've got to go to a whole
Fine.
Other show. With...
Just go do it.
Okay.
Fine.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in.
Merry Christmas. I'll get you back.